We are speaking with Brian Stuberic, the artist for issue number 4 for the present group. It's Friday morning, November 16th, and we're speaking from our home in Oakland, and Brian is speaking from his home in Lawrence, Kansas. Good morning, Brian.
Morning, Eleanor. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks. Good. Morning, Oliver.
Good morning, Brian. I want to start off by talking a little bit about the theme of authenticity in your art. You use a stamp mark suitable for framing on at least the packaging for your work, but sometimes it shows up on the piece itself. How did you start thinking about the value and authenticity of the work as the subject matter for your art?
Well, when I started making, I didn't actually start making art or consider myself an artist till I got to grad school a couple of years ago, and I was thinking about that. Like, I had worked at this art museum as a guard, and, you know, they had these halls lined with shelves filled with like, you know, chipped rock and these torn scraps of papyrus, you know, this sort of bits chiseled out of a cave and put on the wall, everything, you know, painted and torn, scratched or chewed up and spat out was art. And I was trying to figure out what exactly art was to me, you know, how do you know that it's art? How do you know that it's done? And I came up with this idea originally of, well, it's art because it's in a frame. So I had silkscreened I'd taken some map board and in two colors silkscreened this really bad fake wood grain pattern. So I laid down like a solid color in the background, whether it was dark brown or yellow or red or, you know, and then this really heavy, almost, you know, cartoonish wood grain pattern that I silkscreened over top of it. And then I had them cut into frame sections. And then I was framing them up as, you know, or cutting them up, building them into frames, and then putting them on the wall around my pieces as art. Well, you know, how do you know it's art? Well, it's in a frame. And the brown ones were walnut, and the yellow ones were pine, and the red ones were cherry, and it was all these different colors of wood, even though it was completely fake. But it was a way of you know, putting the finished stamp on it. And from there, I thought about that, and I had these actual rubber stamps made. The first one I had made said, this has been deemed good enough. And then it had an X with a line and then a space for the, you know, the slashes for the date. And for a while there, I was stamping, going around just stamping things and signing off on them. And then I was having other people sign off on my things. So I would, you know, hit it with the stamp and then pass it to someone and say, well, I'm going to need you to sign off on this to make sure that this is really good enough. And they would, you know, sign their, kind of look at me twice and then sign their name to it and, you know, put the date in the X's. And then from there, that led to the suitable for framing stamp because, you know, how do you know? What are the standards really? Who decides what's good and what isn't? Well, maybe, you know, you give someone a stamp and you let them run free. So I started stamping things and then having other people stamp things just to sort of have that little bit of, you know, that sort of acceptance from anyone really of what art was.
Right. You said that you didn't think about yourself as an artist until grad school. Why is that? Because you got a BFA in photography, right?
Well, I got a BFA, but I didn't. It's kind of funny because I didn't really study art so much in undergrad. Well, starting with high school, I was in Mexico when I started high school, and they took me out of what they believed to be the least important class, which was art, to tutor me in Spanish. So I didn't get to take a lot of art classes, or really any, when I was in junior high. And then in high school, that I had started in Mexico. And then my parents moved us to the States, and I didn't have the prerequisites to be able to take art. And then I had to take all the English classes. We spoke English at home, but I'd never taken really heavy, like any kind of English classes at school. So I had to go back and take all those requisite English classes so that I could graduate in the state of Ohio. And so there I was, not able to take any art, but I took one photo class and really liked it and decided, okay, well, this is really something. So I went to Ryerson University in Toronto, and the program there was very technical, very, you know, studying the chemistry and the physics behind the photograph, in addition to the art, but mostly sort of photo-based. And then when I graduated in 2003, I think the digital revolution happened the next day. And that was pretty much it. You know, some people work for years before they get replaced by a computer, but for me it was pretty much instantaneous.
Wow.
And there was no call for this, my skill of, you know, in photochemistry. There was no call for it anymore. And so I said, well, what am I going to, you know, they gave us BFAs, even though it was an applied arts degree that we had started for. We ended up getting BFAs. They didn't change the curriculum. They just changed the degree. So I said, well, that's interesting. What am I going to do? And they said, I don't know, be an artist. So I tried painting, and it turns out I'm a terrible, terrible painter. Just because you have the degree doesn't mean you're an artist. I understood that early on. Right. So then I sort of found printmaking to be somewhere in between painting and photography, where I could you know, marry my love of the photo and understanding of the photochemical processes with my complete inability to draw a straight line, and you know, put those two together and come up with this way of being able to make art.
How much does the process play into the creation of the work?
Oh, it's huge. You know, once I find the thing or come up with the idea, then, you know, there's thinking about how many colors, you know, I look at something immediately and think, how many colors can I do this in? Whether I want to really make it, you know, convoluted and try and, you know, stretch it out to 20 colors, or whether I really want to condense it and make it a little bit more poppy and you know, can I only do it in three? And then, I mean, the computer is involved. As much as I'm sort of, you know, I got out of photography because it went digital, and resisting that whole digital thing, I do use the computer in my art, as for the most part, in most of my prints of late, I've been using the computer to make the separations, just because there's no other way, really. Mm-hmm. But the process is huge for me. It's what I really enjoy about making art. And I think if that was taken away and we all just sat in front of computers all day, I don't know what I would do.
Right. Yeah. Along the same lines, with the Failure series, why do you choose to reproduce these images of these moments through this, like, very tedious process, rather than, you know, you could show the open condom wrapper by itself, or you could, you know, photograph them?
Well, if you think about, there's this expanded notion of printmaking going around these days, where, you know, anything that is the physical result of a process, like, you know, the repeatable product of a system that's been set into motion, could be looked at as a print, just like, you know, the paper pulled off the matrix, or the image resulting from the paper pulled off the matrix. And so these images or these things themselves, these objects, before I even get to them, if you think about it in that way, could be the prints themselves. So it sort of seemed only fitting to make them then into prints. Plus, I don't know, it's the fact that it is so carefully reproduced and so lovingly done in, you know, 10 or 12 sometimes colors, but at the same time, it's still just a cigarette butt in the bottom of a corner of a page, you know?
Right.
It's just really, it's so disappointing. They've all this massive, you know, 22 by 30 inch paper. And it's, you know, to make it so much more disappointing and unsatisfying in relation to all that blank space, you know, you have all this paper with a little tiny 1-inch square print in the bottom, like a period at the end of a really boring sentence, you know, and it really just drives it all home.
But in some ways, it also makes it so much more precious. I feel like...
Oh, yeah, the little, exactly, the little single print in the middle of all this paper, and here it is.
Yeah, right. And humorous too, you know. It's really, when I look at it, I don't get depressed at all. I just think it's like, yeah, it's adorable or funny.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, that's the thing about Failure, is that, you know, you don't, and even art, really, you don't have to be so serious about it all the time. You know, I mean, I'm serious about making it, the actual making of the art, and I'm serious about, you know, what I'm doing as an artist, but at the same time, there's, you know, I'm serious about paying my taxes. I don't think that I need to be as serious about art as I am about other things in life. You know, I can sit back and have a good time with it. So, you know, you think about some of the people who I had gone to school with it in the past, or rather met while I was in school, you know, they would come up with these things, these still lives with doll parts. You know, it would be like a photograph of like the arm ripped off a doll nailed to a tree or something. And it was something that they had, you know, reached down into the depths of their soul, and they found this something in the past, and they didn't like the way it made them feel, or it upset them or whatever. And they wanted to really convey that to their audience. Well, if you felt, and I always thought, you know, if you felt bad, why would you want to make other people feel bad too? Why do we have to spread this? Why can't we just, you know... Why can't it be a little bit more lighthearted? And so I started making my work, and you know, trying to decide what it was about being an artist, and what it was about this failure thing too. When I first started when I first started grad school, I was making trying to figure out why I was making prints, why I was making art, and I had come across this entry. There was a guy in Joliet, Illinois, named Costello, and he was putting on this show called Something to Do with Failure at his gallery at the at a university out there. And he had sent out this email call to entry, and he had encouraged, you know, whoever, all the recipients to then forward it to other people. And I ended up getting this call to entry for this failure show from about 10 people. This was before I was doing any art about failure at all or even mentioned it. And I thought, what are these people saying about me and my art? That is that really how you see me? But so I ended up applying to this show, and I got I actually got a piece in. It was this piece about why I was making art. It was called I Want a Boat, and it was printed crooked, off-centered on this pink paper. At the top it said I Want a Boat, and then it had this sort of poorly drawn boat in the middle, and then underneath it had the whole explanation. That's why I made this print, to sell copies to get enough money to buy a boat. It's my play on this whole value thing. You value art, and I value boat. And that made perfect sense to me. Why am I making art? Well, why not? and I think that's really where, when it got into this failure show, and I sort of thought about that for the first time, where maybe, you know, success and failure kind of go along hand in hand, and that's when it really sort of took off for me of making these things about failure and this funny art.
I want to talk a little bit actually about your interaction between your work and the viewer. And a lot of your earlier work acknowledges this interaction, just like we were talking about with the print with the boat, by directly addressing the speaker or the viewer through text on the print. Yet your failure pieces don't necessarily include text, but there still seems to be sort of a reference to an interaction. Do you see these works as more a document of interactions, or still as the site of the interaction themselves?
I think earlier, the earlier ones, I think, are more just a record of something having happened. You know, there is that interaction with the viewer because these things are life-sized. You know, and from a distance, they look, most people think from a distance that it is just the cocktail umbrella, you know, flattened and glued to the page. Mm-hmm. And so people tend to want to sort of, you know, come up to it and really examine it and look at it and try and figure out how it's done. And then half the people, you know, say, oh, well, this is digital, and then walk away really quickly. And the other half really investigate and, you know, understand to look at the print, to look on it and see how much work has gone into it. But then to stand back and say, this is it. Like, you know, it's you worked so hard to make, you know, 10 colors, something you could have just hit print on the printer. You know? And that it's that sort of interaction that sort of, you know, the really sense of disbelief that someone would spend so much time reproducing a cigarette butt life size on a massive piece of paper in 8 colors when they could have just, you know, hit print. It's that little bit of I don't know, disappointment, I guess. But at the same time, you know, disbelief, really, that someone would spend the time to do that. And it's really those earlier failure prints really sort of speak to. Later on, I think this popsicle print conversation, I wanted that to have a little bit more interaction with the viewer, obviously through the text. You know, the viewer is sort of sitting in on this conversation that these two popsicles are having with each other, but only about themselves.